Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Dallas Cowboys' newest defensive tackle, Quinnen Williams, in the building yesterday, being introduced to the new fan base. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray. Andrew Perloff, and probably been asking, what is a realistic or what would be a successful season for the Cowboys the rest of the way? Now, 3-5-1, but they make this splashy deal at the deadline. Jerry been talking about stopping the run, basically, since we were all in diapers. So he finally got one of the highest graded run defenders in the league. But again, as I mentioned, record is 3-5-1. So is the season too late to be salvaged?
Yes, it is. And regardless of what you think about Quinnen Williams, the NFC, the way it's set up, there's going to be a, they're killing the AFC. Week to week, they're just destroying, winning all those matchups. You're going to need 10 or 11 wins, and especially with that tie, that's going to be impossible. I just don't see how the Cowboys, with a very, very tough schedule, are going to get to the playoffs. So I keep pulling back and saying, why are you making a trade deadline deal if it's not for now? And I know what you're going to sell me on.
Well, I'm going to sell you on next year and the year after.
That's not why you make trade deadline deals.
Well, it is when the Jets are the ones who are saying, listen, it's now or never. Like, we're for sale right now. We want the draft picks. We're not waiting until the offseason. And they said Sauce Gardner goodbye for 2 first-round picks. And when you see the opportunity, I think you've got to pounce. And I don't think it was a panic move necessarily for Dallas. I think it's one where they've been thinking about Quinnen Williams actually for some time. It turns out there was a report that Jerry Jones wanted to trade Micah Parsons for Quinnen Williams plus in the offseason. And the Jets said no. And I actually understand why. What was Micah Parsons going to do on this team? Like, right? You're so far away if you're the Jets. The smarter move was to stockpile picks and start to rebuild this thing again. But to me, can I tell you what a successful season would be for the Cowboys for me? Now, you can't go Super Bowl. That's not happening. And not even NFC Championship game or even divisional round. But remember when the Cowboys tied the Packers?
Earlier this year. Yeah.
40-40, I think, was the final score. Something crazy like
that.
Was it 40-40? 38-40.
Okay. Like the Jay-Z thing.
Yeah. Right. Just like
40-40
Jay-Z.
40-40 club.
Perloff's old stomping grounds. The Cowboys were like kind of treating it like a huge win. In a way, it kind of felt like their Super Bowl, and that was kind of pathetic.
Right, because Micah.
Right. But in some ways, I kind of feel like even if the Dallas Cowboys either just barely make the playoffs or just barely out of it, if they're playing meaningful games now in week 15, 16, and 17, I almost think that's enough of a W.
Yeah.
Like, it's enough to get the hopes and dreams back up of the Cowboy fan. I don't know if the rug's going to get pulled out from them again, but 15, 16, 17, you're in that graphic on TV, in the hunt.
Yep.
I think that's probably enough.
And that's why the Dallas Cowboys are careening towards another 30 years of not winning a Super Bowl.
Well, be that as it may, I'm just talking about what's going on right now. You're welcome to weigh in on the Cowboys at 888-710-4ISN. Meanwhile, let's get to our next guest. Ian O'Connor is an award-winning author and journalist who writes for The Athletic and has covered a lot of topics that we've been talking about this morning. Hey, Ian, how you doing?
How are you, Maggie? Andrew? Good to see you.
Thanks so much for doing this. So let's get your thoughts on the New York angle of this, because the Jets now, as I say, love to stack W's on days when they don't actually play games. And they're going to be owning April once again. But I'm curious, was yesterday the trade deadline when they amassed 5 first-round picks over the next 2 years, was this a good day for New York coach Aaron Glenn or a bad day for New York coach Aaron Glenn?
It's a good day, Aggie, because he guaranteed himself employment for next season. And I don't think he was ever getting fired unless the Jets went 1-16 or 0-17. So I don't think that'll happen anyway. But this basically secures him for next season and maybe beyond that. And I think as far as whether or not it's a good day for the New York Jets, ask me in 3 years. And the Jets have made deals like this before where they've reset and tried to rebuild, and it never works. I mean, when they traded Jamal Adams, everybody lauded that deal, and they ended up out of that deal with Garrett Wilson and AVT, and those guys never won any football games. So I think that, yeah, it's a good day. It's probably really the only move the Jets could make to make New York and its fans feel good about where they're going. But it's just this organization has had a history of good days in the offseason, mm-hmm. good days in the draft season, in the preseason, and not in the postseason ever. And so it's just hard to say whether or not this is going to end up being good for anybody in that organization, just given the history.
Considering how much draft capital they got, which is an enormous amount for Sauce Gardner and Quinnen Williams, why is the defense so bad if they have these two great players? And what does that say about the players? Because I have some Jets fans in my life who are a little bit down on, especially Sauce, at this point of the season.
That's a very good question, Andrew. And I think that there are a lot of people inside and outside that building who don't really have a good answer for that. And I remember last year, I felt like, particularly with Sauce, and obviously this is a all-pro level talent, and he proved that his first couple of years. But last year was the year for the Jets, for those defensive players to really step up and play at a high level. That was the one sort of healthy year they had with Aaron Rodgers. And Sauce Williams in particular did not have a good year. He had an interception in the end zone against Minnesota that he dropped, which was really a high school play. And after that game, remember, Robert Saleh gets fired and the whole thing, the bottom fell out of the entire season, and the Aaron Rodgers experience was doomed from that point going forward. And yeah, Quinnen Williams and Sauce, last year was the year they needed to be first team, all pro level players, and neither one pulled that off. And I think that ultimately led to this day, this week, and them not being on this team. So I do believe Darren Mooji looked at the roster and he said, yeah, these guys, they're big name players, high draft picks around the league. People do value them, but they're they are overrated. And I just feel like last year was the year that those guys needed to play at a very high level. And not just them. I'm not putting it all on them. And Rodgers is certainly part of the blame as well. But that defense really did not come through in a big way. And I think ultimately that compelled the Jets to do what they did this week.
Ian O'Connor is joining us. He's a New York Times bestselling author, award-winning journalist. And we're talking about the trade deadline. And, you know, Ian, not just the Jets now. Let's expand this out to all the sports you've covered throughout your career. I don't know if I've ever heard a quote quite like this. So here's Aaron Glenn. We'll play it for the audience. This is the Jets head coach yesterday asking about, is this a team that the Jets can be proud of? Hear this.
Listen, I want this to be a team that the fans are proud of. But again, I never said that we're going to be proud of them right now. At some point, I want this to be a team that that the fans are proud of. And I still stick with that.
I don't know, Ian, you've been covering sports in New York and elsewhere for a long, long time. I want a team that the fans can be proud of. I just never said when. I mean, that's got to be up there.
That's up there. I've heard some incredible statements in New York press conferences, really in 40 years of doing it in the New York area. And I've never heard that one. I'm not even sure Rich Kotite ever said that with the Jets in the mid-90s. So, yeah, Aaron Glenn does need to improve his podium game, among other things. And that's a new one. But listen, the Jets, all that matters now is that they find a franchise quarterback. Once they do that, if they ever do that, a lot of these problems and the dysfunction in the organization will disappear. They need their own Jackson Dart. And whether they find that player in this draft or in the 27 draft, they have to find that player. Once they do that, they're going to be set for 15 years, or at least be relevant, to be competent. The problems they've had in the organization now, they had Sam Darnold, and they let him go. They didn't develop him. They didn't surround him with enough talent or the right talent. And that's a player that they really could have had that would have settled everything down in that franchise for a long time. So that didn't work. They have to find that player, their Jackson Dart. And once they do that, as bad as things are with the Giants right now, they're bad. Everyone knows they have hope for the next 15 years.
Ian, can the fan base wait if they have to wait a year to draft that guy? You mentioned it could be 27. That could mean another year of Justin Fields, which I think feel like a tank. Is it realistic to wait to 27 to draft a quarterback?
I think they'll draft a quarterback probably in the first round this year. If not, then pretty high, just to get a young player at that position and then see if that player works out. And then you have a second shot at it in 27. That's what I think they'll do. And I think that's the one position where if you miss, make a decision pretty early and go right back in the next draft. You have to keep trying to hit on that position until you get it right. And so I do think they'll draft a quarterback in the first round. If not, then maybe in one of the earlier rounds anyway, and then take another shot in 27 if they have to. But as far as not taking a quarterback at all in this coming draft, I don't see that as a possibility. I really don't think they want to have the Justin Fields experience, a bridge quarterback experience for another season. So Jets fans have been waiting for so long, and now working on, what, 15 straight years of missing the playoffs. It's hard to miss the playoffs now with so many wild cards. To do that 15 years in a row is really unforgivable. So, yeah, I think at some point the odds say they'll find that player. And once they do, then the Jets can become a real NFL franchise.
Ian O'Connor is joining us, obviously does more than just cover New York sports, wrote is a New York Times bestseller, has written some phenomenal books. One that we particularly love is Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers, which was phenomenal. But Ian, I'm curious, are you surprised that we really haven't heard much out of Rodgers? He's not doing his weekly appearances on Pat McAfee. You know, it seems like pretty much model teammate in Pittsburgh.
I think Mike Tomlin was never going to allow Rodgers to hijack the season. And I think it was a perfect marriage, really, because Tomlin, he doesn't know how to have a losing season. And what Rodgers needed at the end of his career after the disastrous experience in New York was some stability. And Tomlin represented that. Tomlin was a firewall against having a 5-12 season, which I really think, on top of what happened with the Jets, if Rodgers experienced that and then retired, that would have hurt his legacy. And I think it was a really smart decision to sign with an organization like the Steelers, and where worst case scenario, he'll go 9-8, lose in the first round of the playoffs or miss the playoffs, but be in the mix right up until the end of the regular season. So no, I think that was the trade-off. Okay, we're going to give you the opposite experience that you had with the Jets, but you have to be a Steeler. You have to go back to being a football player. And I think that was a spoken and unspoken agreement that Rodgers had with Mike Tomlin.
Aaron Rodgers looks happy. Is that just me, or is it possible? Because, you know, reading your book, one thing that I noticed about Rodgers had trouble finding elusive happiness. Do you think he's a different person than, say, 10 years ago?
Oh, yeah, I think he is. And I think just, man, that was a very difficult experience in New York. He thought it was going to be this sort of dream come true at the end of his career to try to win a second Super Bowl and get that second ring and do it for a franchise that hasn't been to a Super Bowl since January of 1969. And it was a disaster. And I think to go to an organization that, after getting fired by the New York Jets, which was embarrassing, humiliating, all those things, to get to a stable environment, to go back to being a football player, he got married. And so, yeah, I think he's at peace right now. Now, it's going to be tough for them to win that division. I think the Ravens are going to be a major factor now going forward with Lamar Jackson being healthy. And so I don't think making the playoffs is a given right now. So we'll see how the rest of the season goes. But right now, I think he's in a really good place.
Ian O'Connor joining us. Final one from me, and it's about another subject of one of your New York Times bestselling books. It's Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Time. Now, you did a deep dive into Belichick, his background, his rise, all of that. Now, watching what's gone on at North Carolina, what is the most stunning part about Bill Belichick now from what you're seeing at UNC?
I'm actually not stunned, Maggie, by anything. I thought it would be a struggle early. I was at the first game, which was not good against TCU, but I wrote afterward for The Athletic that I felt, hey, let's not go crazy here. Belichick's going to figure this out. It's going to take a little time. And there's been a lot of dysfunction in that program, I think, because they didn't know how to coach college football. Belichick, Mike Lombardi didn't know how to build a college football team. But you remember his first year in New England, 5-11. He starts his second year 0-2, and then they take off with Tom Brady. So I thought it would take some time. And look, he's inches away from having a three-game winning streak right now, going into a game they should win Saturday against Stanford. They'd be 3-1 in the ACC, literally inches against Cal and Virginia from winning both those games. So they're playing better now. They didn't quit on him. I think next year, assuming he's back, and I think he will be, they'll be pretty good. So I think it's getting better there. I do think there was a lot of dysfunction in the reporting, particularly from Pablo Torre, was really good. But also, they're getting better. Both things can be true, and I think both things are true right now.
Wow. As far as the sort of embarrassment level for him and Jordan Hudson, do you think it's, I mean, listen, we do a radio show. A lot of people called in and said, this is ridiculous. Do you think that that's dying down and he's sort of kind of finding a middle ground here where he can function without everybody making the first sentence about Jordan Hudson?
I think that's a great way of putting it, settling down and just figuring out how to coach college football, how to recruit. They made a lot of mistakes bringing in 70 new players. That was never going to lead to immediate success. So I'm really not surprised that he really struggled. Again, he struggled in Cleveland early on, got to 11-5, beat Parcells in the playoffs, and Art Modell announces that they're leaving the city. So that really destroyed that program. And then again, he lost 13 of his first 18 games in New England and then figured it out. Of course, Tom Brady helped. But I think that he's going to be, if he sticks it out, and I think he will for a while anyway, unless he becomes the next head coach of the New York Giants next year, which I don't think will happen. But I think he'll be a good to very good college football coach next year and beyond. It was always going to be rocky early, particularly with so many dozens of new players on that roster. So, yeah, settling in, settling down, I think, is a good way of putting it.
What did you think of Pablo Torre's reporting on Mike Lombardi's marginal role or overstating his role through the years? Because I'm sure you've covered Lombardi teams before.
Not much. I didn't get into Lombardi too much in my book. And so I've not seen any refuting of that. And so I think at the end of the day, Bill loves Mike Lombardi. He's always valued his opinion. But this is going to rise or fall on Belichick, not Lombardi. It's about Belichick. That's the reason players will go to North Carolina or, frankly, not go to North Carolina. It's Bill Belichick. It's not Mike Lombardi. And his coaching should give them an advantage on most weeks. So I think that, it rises and falls solely on Belichick. And granted, he's not 50 years old anymore. But I still think he's got some left in the tank, and I expect that North Carolina, again, I think they'll win Saturday. That could have been a four-game winning streak right there, and obviously it's not. But I think things slowly but surely are getting better in Chapel Hill, and I suspect that will continue.
We all wanted that documentary to come out on Hulu, but maybe it's probably for Belichick that we don't get that much behind the scenes. He also was named as a semifinalist along with eight other head coaches for the class of 2026 and the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Ian, sorry, just really quickly, you mentioned it, so it made me think of something. You didn't think Belichick will be the next head coach of the New York Giants. Obviously, they have a very strong affinity, so much history between Belichick, the Mara family. John Mara is sick right now, unfortunately. He's dealing with cancer, as they announced. How safe are Brian Daboll and Joe Shane with the Giants?
Safe at all. I think that Shane might be a little safer than Daboll, but even though Jackson Dart, you would think, gives them some security. I think other people can coach Jackson Dart and they'll be fine. I would say if one survives, it will be the GM and not the head coach. But Daboll would have to win some games here down the stretch, maybe win four or five games to really have a shot at coming back. I think that the losing there has spoken for itself over the last 3 years. And yeah, I suspect that the Giants will be in the market for a new head coach unless things dramatically change. And I don't see that happening.
Ian O'Connor writes for The Athletic, must read all the time, and of course, a New York Times bestselling author. Ian, thanks so much for your perspective. We always appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Okay, we got to take a quick break. Want to respond and react, rather, to a couple things that Ian had to say. They're very, very interesting. And Manny just put his head in his hands, as Ian said. They're probably looking for a new head coach next year. But you might get a great head coach, Manny.
Rinse, repeat, recycle, whatever the hell the saying is.
Four or five games is a lot of games.
He's got no talent. He's got a little talent. 888-710-4ISN. Got a lot of guys hurt. 888-710-4476.
Like okay. My will to live.
We take a break. Pete McCarthy is going to join us next with the latest headlines as well. And
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
And he throws, intercepted! Is he inbounds, Deion? Down the right side, yes! He's to the 50! They can't stop him! He can high-step this one half the field! Oh, he waits to the 10, though, and walks into the end zone, does another dance. Touchdown 49ers.
I think that one probably will be shown forever with him, you know, high stepping, hand behind his back for about 96 yards, you know, pointing at the Atlanta bench.
This is my house. I built this and this is my house. I don't care if I'm with the Falcons or not. This is my house and this will always be my house. Now let's continue.
It's Maggie and Perloff on the Infinity Sports Network.
Oh, my God. That was Eric Davis talking about his former San Francisco 49er teammate Deion Sanders scoring a touchdown against Atlanta and high-stepping for 96 yards. Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff. We're doing King of the Mountain, trying to crown the greatest NFL team of all time. And today it's the 85 Bears against Deion and the 94 Niners. Tough task. I mean, Deion was a competitor, so he would get in there and mix it up with the Bears. But I feel like it's going to be tough for those 94 Niners to knock off the Bears.
Well, right now they are leading the poll.
Really?
Pearl. Yeah, poll Pearl. Yeah, at Maggie and Pearl on X. Right now the 94-49ers have a slight lead. You know, one thing about that Niner team, yeah. The 85 Bears are iconic. I think the 49ers, there's so many amazing 49er teams. Maybe some, it's like, oh, was that the Steve Young one? Was that the Joe Montana one? Was that Jerry Rice goes off in that one? Was that the one that didn't have Jerry Rice yet? Maybe as you get further and further away, they all start to mold together a little bit.
I feel like for football fans, the 94 separates itself because it was so long before the last Super Bowl.
That's true.
And it was the crazy. If anybody who was alive to watch that Super Bowl, it was probably the most 43-8 Seahawks over Broncos might be the most lopsided one I've ever seen. This was a offensive lopsided. It looked like, remember, what was it, Bishop Sycamore, the fake high school playing IMG Academy? It was the men and the boys. So maybe the way, but then again, the Bears blew out the Patriots in their Super Bowl. Back to Ian O'Connor was on last segment. One thing that jumped out to me.
Oh, wait, just can go vote with Maggie and Pearl. 85 Bears, 94 49ers.
One thing that jumped out to me, Ian O'Connor was just on. We're talking about several topics, but Bill Belichick, you know, he got me back in. The Godfather 3 style, I think I'm back in now because I watched, for some random reason, I was stuck on the couch watching UNC Virginia. And I'll tell you right now, Virginia is a good team, might even make the college football playoff. And UNC gave them all they could handle. Maybe Belichick is turning this team around. Maybe this next year, as Ian O'Connor said, maybe they're going to be good. I didn't even consider that a month ago, but now I think I'm back in a little bit.
Okay, I mean, yeah, it can't get worse, right? I mean, they've been close. These games it wasn't close against TCU. Some of the early games were not close, but now it's been a little closer, so maybe you see a little bit of improvement. But to me, Belichick's the reasons why this has been bad, to me, are the unforced errors from Belichick.
If he hadn't had time to coach him up.
I'm not talking about that.
Oh, you're not talking about the players. You're talking about the coaching errors?
I'm talking about the off-the-field stuff. I'm talking about Belichick, who was so notorious for do your job, right. Singular focus, not letting any outside issues, you know, cloud the team, you know, hard nose, hard ass, all that stuff. He's anything but. He's got, you know, whether he realized it or not, it's a joke with Jordan Hudson. I think sometimes it's gotten a little too maybe far, but gosh, we're finding out they met. She was 19. I mean, it feels like every single time there's a headline here, it's like, ugh, you know? And
yeah, but it's been a little while since we've had those headlines. That's about 6 weeks ago.
I don't think it's been that long. If you're really into this story, if you're following every back and forth, I think it's been like 3 weeks. So I don't know.
Oh, has it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the last story was Pablo Torre's podcast. For some reason, went after North Carolina GM Mike Lombardi, Belichick's old friend. But none of that's going to matter, honestly. You know how sports works. They have Stanford this week at home.
Yeah.
If they win, it'll be their second straight ACC win. Then they'll probably not win out, but they have a chance to win their remaining games. If he starts winning some games, that's the best way to put Jordan Hudson behind him.
I think that it's a question whether Belichick will even coach next year.
I think I think he's back. And why not?
Well, is North Carolina just so dug in at this point? You know, they've given him a lot of money. But on the flip side, there were reports that I think they seem to be tracking that not everyone wanted to hire him within North Carolina. And there's even people who are suing now the school because they're saying that, you know, there was some malpractice with how Belichick was hired. So it's been a soap opera, which is the opposite of how Belichick operated when he was an NFL coach.
Yeah. But you just give me blindly their record. You know, they got blown out by TCU 48-14, got blown out by Clemson. That's embarrassing, 38-10. But then they lost a really as close as possible game at Cal. Then they tried for a two-point conversion in overtime against Virginia and failed. That was bold. Virginia, who's now 12 in the country, and they just clobbered Syracuse with a backup quarterback. I think that's improvement, Maggie. You cannot lie. X's and O's wise, something has changed a little bit. Now, will it last? They end the season with Duke and NC State. I think with all the people in North Carolina, those are probably big games, but it does seem like they're trending up. So I think that North Carolina fans are going to be able to squint and see something at the end of the season. As he brought in all those transfers that he had mentioned, also, I don't love this quarterback decision, what he ended up. He was way too late on quarterback. If they can get in early, who knows? I'm just saying, who knows?
Belichick's just lucky it's basketball season now.
I don't know.
Carolina Tar Heels is going to take a little of the attention away. Let's get to Pete McCarthy, who's got the latest headlines for us. Good morning, Pete.
Yeah, good morning. Some breaking news this morning. The home of Miami Heat coach Eric Spoelstra was heavily damaged by a massive fire this morning.
Oh, boy.
Seen some videos online. It's essentially leveled. There are no immediate reports of any injuries, according to the Associated Press. Spoelstra was not home when the fire started. The blaze was called in at 4:36 a.m. The Heat had played in Denver last night, so their charter flight landed a little after 5 a.m., so Spoelstra got back in time. There's some video on the internet where they say it's Spoelstra. You kind of see it from the back. It looks like him, and he looks kind of distraught watching his house, his home on fire.
But no one was in there, Pete? No one's hurt?
As far as we know, nobody was in there. No reports of injuries for now. But
thank God.
Yeah, certainly sending our best to Eric Spoelstra there. Also tonight, Thursday night football, the 7-2 Broncos hosting the 2-6 Raiders. The Broncos are hot. They've won six in a row, but I think you're going to hear a lot about the coaches in this game. It's a fun matchup. You have 74-year-old Pete Carroll facing 61-year-old Sean Payton.
They're a downhill running team and don't mind working the perimeter, all of that. I think it's, and you think of all the years with Drew Brees, you think of him as a passing guy, but they weren't when you played against them. They were always had a real good conscience about running the football.
A lot of respect between these two. Peyton called Carroll an industry friend. I'm actually surprised they've only gone head to head seven times previously. Peyton is 4-3 against Carroll, but Carroll has won both of their postseason matchups, which includes that Marshawn Lynch beast quake, 67-yard touchdown run, which in this research, I started watching that, and it still brought a smile on my face. I don't care. I'm not a Seahawks fan. It's just an amazing run.
I like industry friend is great, by the way.
Yeah, frenemy.
Yeah, we see each other at conferences once in a while.
Yeah. Hey, Sean, how you been? Yeah. How's the family? But that was the year that the Seahawks made the playoffs, and they were like 7-9 or something,
correct.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a big upset. But it's kind of wild. I didn't realize the coaches in the AFC West, I mean, that division is just loaded. So you have Carroll, Peyton, Andy Reid, and Jim Harbaugh. Mm-hmm. They've all won Super Bowls. Harbaugh and Carroll are the only football coaches to win titles in college and the NFL. That is, I mean, you're almost looking at four Hall of Famers in that division at the same time. Yep.
Well, Harbaugh, no, probably. Well, because it's
well, not, I guess
it's
not,
not
NFL. Yeah. Well, we'll see what he does with the Chargers, I suppose. He's still early.
He does, according to him, have the greatest quarterback of all time.
It's true. But if he doesn't have anyone to protect that greatest quarterback of all time, it's going to be a tough end of the year.
I mean, all the positive energy in the world cannot fix the health status of the L.A. Chargers. I mean, it's year in and year out.
I'm actually surprised that Jim Harbaugh has been pretty toned down. You know, I know he's had some health stuff going on, but, you know, obviously Jim Harbaugh and Pete Carroll have some major beef, you know, from the 49ers Seahawks days. But I thought that Jim Harbaugh would be a little more of a walking quote, and he's not really giving us that.
I feel
every
like that's
week.
More Chargers than him. I think he's been weird.
Weird, he's like always weird. Like more weird than usual.
No, not more weird. I think he's been Jim Harbaugh. I just think the Chargers are kind of off the beaten path a little bit as a team in terms of how we focus on his press conference. Like Michigan is one of the programs in college football,
so and he had a big scandal at the end.
Yeah,
which
a big
was funny.
Scandal, and he also was a high profile guy. He's coaching Michigan, so I think everyone was just paying attention to him a lot more. I mean, I've watched some of these clips. He's still saying weird stuff every week. It's just not making national news.
Oh, that's funny. I kind of agree with Maggie's first instinct that he's calmed down a little bit. But maybe it's just I'm not paying attention. It could easily be. I mean, there was a point in Michigan where he was really capturing headlines. He's getting a little older. Who knows?
I want to drive my RV out.
By the way, Jim Harbaugh, we talk about Hall of Fame case. I mean, he's only 6 seasons in the NFL, but he is 9th all-time in winning percentage. He's at a 68% winning percentage. He has plenty of guys behind him that have all made the Hall of Fame that don't have his winning percentage right now.
I don't even want to ask this because it depends on that list how many years active, but I know who's number one. Maybe not, depending on how many years you need.
He is not going to be Nick Sirianni.
He's definitely Matt number LaFleur. One because he hasn't enough years to qualify, but he's headed
there.
One.
He's 5.
Oh, he's 5?
Yeah, Guy Chamberlain, who coached in 1922.
Oh, of course, Guy.
Is ahead
people
of
aren't John named Madden, Guy
like
anymore.
John Madden, I think, is technically the modern day person.
Oh, John Madden's higher than Sirianni? What was he at?
He's at 75.9%. Sirianni's at 71%.
What about Matt LaFleur? Is he on that list?
Matt LaFleur is on this list as well. He's a little below Harbaugh at 13. 67%.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Harbaugh, you need a Super Bowl as a coach to even get in the conversation, and often that's not enough.
And Maggie's favorite coach, Sean McDermott's on this list at 16.
Yeah.
Yippee.
I mean, Nick Sirianni could easily have 2 Super Bowls by now, I just want to point out. Hall of Fame coach.
You see what happens, bro?
Hall of Fame coach. Nick Sirianni is going to the Hall of Fame, Manny. Wrap your head around that.
What I should do
speaking
is just
tone down.
Say you'd be wrapping Sirianni something else around your neck. Yeah.
Yeah, by the way.
Sorry, Pete, go ahead.
Sirianni hasn't done much. Now, I feel like Big Dom is now the face of the
he's
team.
He's not good at his job, that's why. He's not good at what
bringing
he does.
Steak sandwiches to Scataboo.
I was trying to think if you get injured. Is like that. Is that what you want, a cheesesteak? I don't
kinda. Comfort food.
That story was such a me thing out of Philadelphia. Like, look at me. I'm going to be sympathetic. Look at me. Bunch of
yeah, and it's disingenuous, Manny, because Philadelphia never wants to be the good guy.
No, you to know? A New Yorker? Get out of here.
No, but I do think that garbage, if I was like in the hospital or if I, God forbid, or if, you know, something happened, like, hell yeah, cheesesteak. You can bring me a cheesesteak. That would make me feel better.
There's always
the Camp Scataboo doesn't like cheesesteaks.
Well, I'm sure he... No, half down.
Is there anything he doesn't like?
Yeah, just eat the meat raw. I don't even think he cook it for Scataboo. Caveman.
Big, he would bark while he does it.
The thing about Big Dom is friends with everyone. Have you ever heard the stories? I always hear a story behind the scenes of the Eagles. Yeah, then Big Dom showed up with like Bryan Cranston or some random. The guy has a million friends in Hollywood and the NFL. I'm not joking. He is the... He's the connective tissue of the NFL.
Yeah, congratulations.
Dude's never met a camera he doesn't like. What else you got, Pete?
Well, the Broncos, I mean, just looking at the way the AFC West stacks up right now, the Broncos are first place in the West. They're a game ahead of the Chargers, who you guys mentioned are very banged up. Joe Alt obviously hurt this past week as well. The Chiefs are sitting third at 5-4. So pretty big opportunity here for the Broncos. They're going to be heavily favored tonight. But do we like the Broncos' chances of winning the AFC West over Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs and finally knocking them down a peg?
Yeah, I mean, of course we do, because the Chiefs' schedule is ridiculous. I think the Broncos, you made the whole plane out of the fourth quarter. Bo Nix would be the MVP of the league. But yeah, definitely. Like the Chiefs are going to have a real hard time getting a high enough record. I'm not even talking about like how good the teams are. It's just where they are in the standings.
So Chiefs and Broncos have not played yet. They're going to play next week and then week 17. For Denver, though, still have to play the Packers. Jacksonville, got the Chargers one more time. You got Raiders tonight, you get Raiders again. You get a banged up Washington Commanders team. I think the Broncos might cruise to this division title, quite frankly. Nothing is easy for them. Like, nothing is easy for them, but yeah, I think that they're definitely going to be in the driver's seat.
And, you know, they play the Chiefs well. You know, they should have beaten them last year when the Chiefs were really at the top of their game.
And look at the Chiefs. I mean, we talk about them as a Super Bowl contender, so maybe we don't notice it as much, what they've done in that division. They've won that division 9 years running.
Yeah.
Even the year before, they didn't win. They were 11-5.
Well, when you got the Raiders and the Chargers in there, I mean, there's a lot of banana peels that got stepped on.
Whatever, Bills fan. I mean, that's the ultimate. The Bills have won how many in a row for the same exact reason?
The Bills won 5 in a row.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Oh, you're a Jets fan? Yeah. Yeah.
Actually,
I was talking to somebody the other day. Yeah. I was talking to a buddy of mine. He's a Buccaneers fan. So he's in the NFC South. And it's just so unfair. You know, the Jets, they went from Josh Allen in the division, Tom Brady in the division, Dan Marino in the division, Jim Kelly in the division. And then what do you have in the NFC South? Come on.
Yeah.
Bryce Young, anybody?
Pete, can I get your take on something quickly? Because Pete, obviously, he and I worked at MLB.com together for a really long time. Pete's done every baseball thing you can possibly do. And I consider you, Pete, like a baseball historian. And your knowledge of baseball is amazing. The Blue Jays.
That's baseball.
How they lost Game 6, Game 7 of the World Series, I think is the worst loss in the history of sports.
Oh, gosh.
It's 48 hours of pure pain. And listen, I know bad losses as a Bills fan. I have a PhD in terrible losses. But you lose a Super Bowl, you lose a 13 seconds game. I only have to experience it one time. I don't have to do Game 6 and Game 7. Now, I know Red Sox fans might say 86, losing against the Mets, whatever. I think this is as bad as it gets. And I
think
don't
a Mariners fan might disagree. And the Mariners went through the same thing like 3 weeks ago. They had the huge home run, the Eugenio Suarez home run to beat the Blue Jays in Game 5. They had to go to Toronto rather than bring it home, but lost games 6 and 7. Same thing. I mean, just 48 miserable hours. Baseball sucks, man. Baseball will destroy
inning game,
you.
Though? Like, oh, yeah. No, baseball will crush your will to live.
I don't mean the sport. It's just, as a fan, it's just absolutely brutal how it all stretches out and hits you at the end. But I can't imagine the Blue Jays fans. I mean, ugh.
My Phillies lost 2 games at home to the Diamondbacks in 2023. I mean, the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, but Pearl, no one even remembers that except for you guys. This is epic. This was an 18-inning game. You're going up against a dynasty in the Dodgers. You've got the biggest stars of the game against you, and you've got them. You came back from the 18-inning loss. You took the lead in the series. You're going home for Game 6 and 7. Again, I'm not trying to make Toronto fans feel worse about this. I'm just saying let's put this a little context perspective. I think this is as bad as it could ever be.
Well, I would counter. What about Cleveland, Chicago in Game 7 of 2016? That one.
Horrible because
Cleveland an even longer drought than Toronto.
But, you know, some ways, the Cubs in some ways were also the lovable losers who were up against a curse. This is the Dodgers who were spent their way to a title.
And it's not, to me, you're two outs away from winning the World Series, and you let Miguel Rojas hit the game-tying home run. Miguel Rojas is the one who did that to you against your, you know, stud closer who's been terrific. Like, that's what would eat at me. I forget about Game 6 and the ball sticking in the wall, right? Addison Barger getting doubled off. Fine. I mean, but Miguel Rojas, you were two outs away from winning the World Series.
See, Pete, I knew you would know what I'm talking about.
He's there
for
vibes. Dude, the guy was there for vibes. He wasn't there because he was expected to get a big hit. He's there because he's an old guy. The team likes him. They wanted to change the energy for Game 6. He's a vibe guy. And he hit the game-tying home run with two outs to save the year for the Dodgers.
Man. Pete, thank you. Fantastic job all morning long. Thanks for filling in on last minute, too, for Bogish. We appreciate you so much.
Happy to do it.
Okay, we will take a quick break. It looks like we may have some breaking news, so we'll get to that in just a moment. It's
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay.
Daily. Do you believe in that?
Dion.
You believe
that? Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. We have not checked in on Deion nearly enough this season.
No.
Because at 3-6, it has just not been an awesome season for Deion. And little did we know, there were some coaching changes, tweaks behind the scenes. Apparently, Deion Sanders taking away play calling responsibilities from Pat Shurmur. Here's Deion.
I might already change it and you don't know. I don't do stuff and blow the whistles in and make major announcements. Hey, I don't do that kind of stuff. I do it and I let you guys still take shots. You don't even know you may be shooting at the wrong target. So some things take place that you may not be privy to.
At what point would they be changes that we do notice, though?
That's up to you to notice them. They may have already happened.
I could have told you guys that Pat Shurmur probably wouldn't be the best idea.
Well, this is the second time he's taken away play calling responsibilities in 2 years from Pat Shurmur. So yeah, it's been kind of an up and down situation.
The story feels familiar.
I mean,
Deion always has such a strange coaching staff, too, with all the former pros. It's hard to keep track of exactly what's going on.
Yeah, that's fair. It was just funny when Deion Sanders says, whenever he says something like, I don't do anything for the bells and whistles, like, I'm sorry, what? You're Deion Sanders. You do everything for the bells and whistles. You're an extremely public person. So as far as Deion, listen, it'd be easy to point to health concerns and say, listen, it's been a really tough year going back to the offseason. But Pearl, Deion is rejecting any suggestion that his health challenges recovering from the colon cancer is an excuse.
Your health challenges has been as real as they can.
Yeah, but that ain't got nothing to do with the win and loss column.
You don't think so?
No. I ain't playing. I wish the world I could. Especially corner right now. We're short. I wish I could play some corner right now. But no. I mean, but I got to do a better job in this whole thing. That's on me.
Yeah, and that's kind of where we want to land on right there. And Deion, obviously, always charming. But they're going to go to Juju Lewis, Pearl. They made that announcement when Colorado plays at West Virginia this Saturday. So he's obviously the freshman phenom. He'll be coming around the mountain.
Juju is coming around the mountain when he comes.
Oh, my favorite. Coming around the mountain when he comes. Hee-haw. But Pearl, this is our biggest question. We can't tell if Deion Sanders is actually a good football coach. And that's what he kind of acknowledged there. He goes, I don't want to use my health as an excuse. The win-loss column says we're 3-6. But in a season where they don't have Shador Sanders anymore and they don't have Travis Hunter anymore, it's, you know, he can recruit clearly with the best of them. But coaching.
Wait, does anyone think he's a good coach? I didn't know that was a thing people thought. Like X's and O's? You thought Deion was doing that?
Well, I mean, listen, I've watched a couple of these Colorado games. I've had some questions about timeout usage and some play calls. So, yeah, we could get on him about that a little bit. But he's a power four coach in a team that was one game away from making the Big 12 championship.
Oh, but Deion's admitted he's a delegator as a coach. You know, he's bringing something completely different as a coach. It doesn't really, you know, you don't talk about him as a good, bad coach compared to, like, I don't know, Billy Napier or something. Like, he's not calling plays like that.
Is that a pass because he's such a
big
player?
When you bring in Deion Sanders, you're not bringing him in because, like, okay, we are going to bring in Ben Johnson and have a bunch of neat play calls. He's the opposite. He's basically a spokesman. He's a face. He's like, I'm going to create excitement. Right? He said that when he got to Colorado. I'm going to create a vibe here, and he did. Unfortunately, it's fallen back. It's going to be hard. Juju Lewis was the number one recruit in the country, so maybe he's the real deal. But he just turned 18 a few weeks ago. He's a young quarterback. It's going to be hard. I don't think Deion has a future. I do not think he's a good coach, by the way, to answer that question.
And coaching past this year, I mean, he'd have every reason to just say, okay, like my health concerns, he doesn't need the money, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Although I don't think the NFL is on the table at all either. It's funny because, and thank you for that, Manny, but we're talking about Maggie Perloff, King of the Mountain, which is our search for the greatest NFL team of all time. And you can go vote right now if you're into this kind of thing. 94 San Francisco 49ers taking on the Chicago Bears, 1985 Chicago Bears, two iconic teams. And it's funny because Deion Sanders came to the 49ers right before that season, and he was one of the reasons they turned things around and finally got over the hump past the Dallas Cowboys.
I mean, he's Deion, iconic. There's no doubt about it. Deion the legend will never die.
No, and it shouldn't. I mean, he's an Inner Circle Hall of Famer. right? But it's just like we wondered whether or not the coaching would, not that he would be not as into it. It's not about that. I think he's doing a job. But the idea that, you know, he's going to have success without Travis Hunter and without his son Shador.
Oh, yeah, tough task at Colorado. Remember, Colorado was bad before he got there.
Of course, one-win team. Before we get out of here, we do want to bring you some breaking news. Now, this is extremely sad. The Dallas Cowboys are announcing that Marshawn Nealon, the second-year defensive end, has passed away. We are not getting any reason why. We are not getting any more details except for a somber statement from the Cowboys saying that he was a beloved teammate and member of our organization.
Yeah, very promising young player. He's from Grand Rapids, Michigan, Maggie, and I think we might be on there. This is a gut punch because, yeah, I'd never heard anything but good things about him. He sure seemed like he had a bright NFL career ahead of him.
And he was the one who scored the touchdown on the block punt
by
on
Sam
Monday
Williams,
night.
Yeah.
Yep, he just had that big play, and he had actually started the previous three games before that, and it seemed like things were kind of moving on the up and up for Marshawn Nealon.
Yeah, I'm going to be watching and listening all day to find out more details because this is just a shock.
Yeah, man, hearts go out to his family, and now the Dallas Cowboys, where things were starting to look up, Pearl, after the trade for Quinnen Williams, have to deal with this. And definitely puts football in perspective because none of this is really important. Okay, let's say thank you, EJ Stewart, Manny Rodriguez, to Pete McCarthy, to Andrew Kaplan. Thank you to Ian O'Connor, who joined us. Zach Gelb jumped on the show today. Weedos and coffee drinkers. See ya.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.